appreciate your generosity. Each year, for a week, we host Fund Drive, our annual fundraising campaign that augments our budget and supports our operations. Thank you for being radio's best friend.
This is Democracy Now!
The IPCC is clear in terms of our capacity still to be able to reach a strong 2030 goal. And that could happen if we focus our efforts and if we are able to create a process of synergy, collaboration, and global solidarity.
As negotiations continue here at the UN Climate Summit, we'll speak to Colombia's chief negotiator, Environment Minister Susana Mohamed. She just chaired the UN Biodiversity Conference in Cali. We'll talk about Colombia's pledge to phase out fossil fuels, efforts to decrease deforestation, and Colombia's coal embargo on Israel over the war on Gaza. Susana Mohamed is a Colombian of Palestinian descent. Then we'll look at the growing debate over nuclear power as Google, Amazon, and Microsoft invest in nuclear plants to power their artificial intelligence projects. But first, we'll speak to the daughter of Gubad Ibadolu, a prominent Azerbaijani activist and anti-corruption economist, now under house arrest.
They also tortured him in detention center. He did not have access to drinkable water. He did not access the proper food, medication, doctor visit. He was not allowed to be even visited by International Committee of Red Cross.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We are broadcasting from Baku, Azerbaijan, from the UN Climate Summit. In northern Gaza, at least 17 Palestinians were killed Monday when Israel's military bombed a home near the hospital in Beit Lahia. The dead were members of the family of Dr. Hani Badran, one of the few remaining medical workers at Kamal Adwan Hospital. Video shows hospital director Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, who lost his own son to an Israeli airstrike last month, comforting Dr. Badran after delivering the news. The hospital since come under fresh attacks by Israeli forces who shelled and fired on the building, including right outside Dr. Abu Safia's office. Dr. Abu Safia reports wounded patients are dying daily due to a severe lack of doctors and medical supplies. Elsewhere, an Israeli airstrike on a house in Gaza City Monday killed 7 Palestinians and wounded 10 others. Survivors said the strike came without warning.
We were at home having breakfast. I went out and suddenly heard the sound of a bombing. I returned back thinking it was another house that was hit. I saw the whole house was damaged. I started searching and discovered all of the murderers were kids. All of those who were at home were elderly, children, and infants. They were all women. Who else would be there? All of the men were at work. We were recovering them in pieces.
On Monday, the United Nations Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace Process warned the UN Security Council that conditions in Gaza are, quote, among the worst we've seen during the entire war and are not set to improve, unquote. The warning came as Sri Lanka's UN ambassador delivered an annual report by the UN Special Committee on Palestinian Human Rights.
This year's report examines the mass civilian casualties and life-threatening conditions intentionally imposed on Palestinians in Gaza. Our findings conclude that Israel's methods of war align with the characteristics of genocide.
In Lebanon, at least 5 people were killed and 31 others wounded in an Israeli attack on a densely populated neighborhood in central Beirut. The airstrike tore through an apartment building near Lebanon's parliament and close to a UN building and several embassies. This is survivor Hussein Zahwa, whose family had fled earlier Israeli attacks on southern Lebanon.
At the time of the explosion, there was a lot of screaming. I mean, to the point that I could hear my little daughter, who was 7 years old, calling me, "Dad, Dad, Dad." Because of the smoke, they could not breathe. I don't know how I went up. The gate that I was opening was on fire. It was burning. I don't know how I opened it. I went up and pulled them from the rubble. Thank God it went well.
UNICEF warns 2 months of Israeli attacks on Lebanon have killed more than 200 children and injured over 1,100. UNICEF spokesperson James Elder warned nations not to remain silent in the face of what he called the, quote, normalization of horror in Lebanon. Meanwhile, a rocket fired by Hezbollah from Lebanon injured at least 6 Israelis and sparked a fire in Tel Aviv on Monday night. In diplomatic news, U.S. envoy Amos Hochstein said a ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon is, quote, now within our grasp, unquote, after meeting with Lebanon's parliament and caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati in Beirut today. U.S. senators will vote Wednesday on whether the U.S. should halt $20 billion of arms sales to Israel. Senator Bernie Sanders introduced the joint resolutions of disapproval as the Biden administration has continued to violate U.S. laws that prohibit the transfer of weapons to governments committing human rights violations. 6 senators have publicly backed the resolutions thus far. Jeff Merkley, Brian Schatz, Elizabeth Warren, Peter Welch, Chris Van Hollen, and Bernie Sanders. Meanwhile, the rights group Al-Haq and Global Legal Action Network have taken the U.K. government to court for continuing to supply F-35 fighter jet parts and other weapons to Israel, despite saying it would suspend Israeli export licenses over international humanitarian law violations. The U.K. said it exempted F-35 parts from its arms suspension to avoid, quote, undermining U.S. confidence in the U.K., unquote. In related news, activists in Canada have blockaded the entrances to Collins Aerospace in Oakville and Honeywell Aerospace in North Vancouver, both of which supply parts for F-35 jets used by Israel to kill Palestinians. Moscow says Ukraine fired 6 U.S.-supplied long-range missiles into Russia for the first time today. The Russian Ministry of Defense says Ukraine used the Army Tactical Missile System known as ATACMS in the strike on Russia's Bryansk region. This comes after President Biden gave Ukraine the green light to begin striking inside Russia and as Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a decree lowering the threshold for the use of nuclear weapons. The revised nuclear doctrine states any attack on Russia by a nation backed by a nuclear power will be considered a joint attack on Russia. It also allows for Russia's use of nuclear weapons in response to aggression against allies, including Belarus. On Monday, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer also signaled Britain will supply long-range Storm Shadow cruise missiles to Ukraine for attacks on Russian soil. Separately, a Russian missile attack on Ukraine's Black Sea port city of Odessa Monday killed 10 people and wounded 44. 4 children are among the wounded in the attack, which struck a residential neighborhood. President-elect Trump has nominated Fox News personality Sean Duffy as Secretary of Transportation. In the 1990s, Duffy starred in MTV reality TV shows, including The Real World, Boston, and Road Rules. Duffy served 5 terms as a Republican Congress member representing Northern Wisconsin until 2019, when he resigned from Congress. In 2016, he authored the PROMESA Act, which created an unelected, federally appointed control board with sweeping powers to run Puerto Rico's economy. Duffy has a 2% lifetime score from the League of Conservation Voters. He's previously blamed the sun rather than human activity for global heating, and has promoted what he called alternative science, challenging the overwhelming scientific consensus on the climate crisis. Meanwhile, a lawyer representing two women who testified that Trump's nominee for Attorney General Matt Gaetz paid them for sex has revealed new details about their testimony to the House Ethics Committee. The lawyer, Joel Leppard, on Monday told CNN one of his clients was an eyewitness to Gaetz having sex with a minor.
She was invited to a party in July of 2017. She testified to the House that as she was walking out to the pool area, she turned to her right and she witnessed her client, I'm sorry, her friend having sex with Representative Gaetz. And her friend at that time was 17.
Attorney Leppard has called on the House Ethics Committee to release its report on Gaetz, who resigned from Congress last week, even as President Trump tapped him to lead the Department of Justice. So far, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson has refused calls to release the report on Gaetz. Donald Trump confirmed Monday he plans to declare a national emergency and deploy the military to enact mass deportations when he returns to office. The ACLU has filed a lawsuit against Immigration and Customs Enforcement seeking more information on Trump's plans, including ICE's use of privately chartered flights. The ACLU's director warned of an unprecedented attack on immigrants, writing, quote, "As we ready litigation and create firewalls for freedom across blue states, we must also sound the alarm that what's on the horizon will change the very nature of American life for tens of millions of Americans," unquote. The FBI is investigating what appears to be a new campaign of abusive text messages, this time targeting Latinx and LGBTQ people. Some recipients receive messages telling them they were selected for deportation. Other messages said recipients should report to a re-education camp. This comes on the heels of a text message campaign targeting Black people in the wake of Trump's election victory, in which recipients were told to report to plantations for slavery. On Capitol Hill, House Republicans are considering spending caps and new work requirements for recipients of Medicaid, SNAP, nutrition assistance, and other social programs. That's according to the Washington Post, which reports the changes would impact at least 70 million low-income people. The proposed cuts come after Trump promised to slash the corporate tax rate from 21% to 15%, an annual tax cut worth $48 billion to the 100 largest U.S. corporations. Here in Azerbaijan, the UN COP29 climate summit has entered its final stretch with negotiators from nearly 200 nations still far apart on a new climate finance commitment. One major source of debate is a proposed UN-backed carbon market, which proponents say could help offset an extra 5 billion metric tons of carbon emissions annually. Opponents say carbon markets allow major polluters to greenwash their emissions while devastating the environment and frontline communities. This is Ariel Deranger, director of Indigenous Climate Action.
These carbon markets are literally putting our lands and territories up for land grabs and to allow the sanctioning of multinational corporations to have a system to sort of simply buy themselves out of continuing to pollute.
A recent study in Nature Communications looked at the use of carbon credits in more than 2,000 projects. It found less than 16% of carbon credits issued constituted real emission reductions. After headlines, we'll have more on the COP29 UN Climate Summit here in Baku, Azerbaijan, speaking with Colombia's Environment Minister, Susana Mohammed. A Hong Kong court has sentenced 45 pro-democracy activists to up to 10 years in prison for their involvement in an unofficial primary election in 2020. It was the largest trial yet under the Beijing-imposed national security law. Among those convicted were prominent activists Benny Tai and Joshua Wong. This is a pro-democracy activist, Chen Poying, whose husband, Leung Kwakong, received a sentence of nearly 7 years.
Actually, the situation is quite clear. All these people are peaceful. They have always only called for people to vote, which is the most peaceful and legal method. It's shocking that the court has given such harsh sentences.
And in New Zealand, 42,000 people gathered in front of the Parliament building in Wellington earlier today after taking part in a historic march to oppose a bill that would roll back Indigenous Maori rights established in the Treaty of Waitangi, considered New Zealand's founding document. This is one of the protesters.
We just want to make sure that we're not giving away what was taken away from us, you know, what's left of what we have in our culture and in our people, you know.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit in Baku, Azerbaijan. We begin today's show with more on the ongoing crackdown on human rights defenders here in Azerbaijan. Gubad Ibadoglu is a political economist and anti-corruption activist who's called for greater transparency in oil and gas sector revenues. He was violently detained in July of 2023 on charges Human Rights Watch describes as bogus. If convicted, he faces over 17 years in prison. He spoke to the BBC last week from house arrest.
Azerbaijan economy heavy relies on the oil and the gas sector. My academic and the policy research focus on the oil and the gas revenue and how the oil and the gas revenue manage in Azerbaijan. And I promote the transparency, anti-corruption and accountability, not in the Azerbaijan level, in the national level. As you know, I am academic. I need to go to the university, but instead the university, I am going every week, twice to register, to report the police department. I am a law-abiding citizen of Azerbaijan. Unfortunately, we are living the lawless country. There is no any role of the court, and this is not legal process. It depends on the political decision.
Before his arrest, Gubad Ibadoglu was a senior visiting scholar at the London School of Economics and Rutgers University. He'd previously led anti-corruption nonprofit here in Baku called the Economic Research Center, which the government shut down in 2014. Since then, Ibadoglu had been living in exile until he returned last year to visit his family when he was detained. He spent the next 9 months in pre-trial detention and was moved to house arrest earlier this year because of his deteriorating health. To talk more about Gubad Ibadoglu, we're joined right now by his daughter, Jala Biramova, a human rights lawyer who focuses on LGBTQ rights. They've been advocating for his release, as well as the release of other political prisoners here in Azerbaijan. And they won the 2024 Magnitsky Prize in the category of Outstanding Young Human Rights Activist. They join us now from Johannesburg, South Africa. Jala, welcome to Democracy Now! I'm sorry under these conditions. Can you talk about why your father was imprisoned and now under house arrest?
Thank you a lot for having me here. And the main reason my dad, Dr. Gubad, was in prison is that because of his research on corruption and the oil and gas industry and how it affects environment, the transparency, and the oil and gas industry, also quite Azerbaijani one, well known for money laundering and the corruption around the world. What my dad was doing, he was investigating money laundering while he was teaching at LAC. And what his investigations were showing as well is that Azerbaijan was not only money laundering, but also using the money to corrupt Western politicians, diplomats, but at the same time, not doing it alone, but doing it together with Russia and the Turkish government. What my dad was trying to do is to investigate them, but also he opened a foundation in UK And that foundation is supposed to serve as a scholarship for Azerbaijan students. And my dad wanted to get that laundered money to that foundation so that the Azerbaijani students can actually come and study in Western countries, learn more about human rights and democracy, and then try to, young people try to change the country in a better, in a meaningful way. And what that's what basically was the main reason that Azerbaijan government decided to detain him in a very horrible fashion, as they basically physically assaulted both my parents.
Can you talk about the day that your dad was arrested?
On the day when my dad was arrested, I was actually working on my diploma thesis for my master's degree. We actually talked, and he told me that he's going to come and read that and let me know what he thinks about it. And then he went together with my mom to do a shopping. My dad came to see my grandma, who is a disabled person, so they were doing shopping for her. And on the way, while driving, the six police cars, actually, they were civil cars, so they didn't have even, like, police emblem on them, physically, they crashed their car, and then 20 men in black came and physically assaulted my parents. My mom was extremely terrified. She actually saw that this is some kind of like a trafficking or mafia, like organ mafia or sex mafia. So she was actually screaming, saying that, like, I'm too old for that. Like, my husband's organs are not working, because they didn't have any police symbol and they didn't even introduce themselves. So they basically attacked on my family, my parents. As a result, my mom lost 30% of her nerve function on her right side of brain. So she has been having difficulties just to balance herself. And my dad was kept 9 months under the isolation center without no access to drinkable water, proper food or medication, and then transferred to the house arrest.
And talk more about what happened to your mother.
So while my mom was detained, she was actually kept there to pressure my dad. And the reason that they were trying to do is they were threatening my dad that they're going to rape her and they're going to physically assault her. So they were kept in different cars, but then later on in different rooms in organized crime department since their detention. So they couldn't even meet. My mom has to stay in Azerbaijan for 2 months and she was being followed all the time. We couldn't get her out because she had a travel ban. But me and my brothers, we had been doing this advocacy around the world to rescue our parents. And as a result of European Parliament resolution on September 2023, we managed to move my mom to Sweden together with me. So she's staying with me right now. And we had to hospitalize her a couple of times in Lund Hospital. However, it took us 2 months to get her out. And she was, in a sense, our priority to rescue, because she was we were extremely worried about her, as she has never done anything political. And the reason that they did this, the way that they physically assaulted my parents and brutally attacked them, is because they wanted to show everybody and create also a chilling effect. They wanted to show that, see if the Aliyev regime can detain a LAC professor and actually can physically assault his wife, then he can do it to anybody. Because never in our history anybody's wife has been detained or has been physically assaulted in this way. So it's the first time for us, for our society as well.
We're, I guess you could say, in a kind of silo here at the UN Climate Summit, Jala. And there's very little awareness here of what's going on outside. If you can talk about what has happened over the last year in the lead up to this COP summit, and your father, an anti-corruption economist, is not unrelated to this summit, because he particularly is calling for transparency around oil and gas transactions. And if you can talk about what those oil and gas transactions mean for the president, Aliyev, and the people in his government.
Now, we basically have more than 300 political prisoners. When my dad was detained, before his detention, we had 98 political prisoners. And after him, in less than 6 months, they detained more than 200 people. So what we call it is the start of an unprecedented crackdown. And what we understand that is quite related to COP29. In previous events that Azerbaijan hosted, like Eurovision or some kind of like European Games, we had a lot of activism has been done by civil society. People will do a lot of activism. People will try to inform everybody what's going on in Azerbaijan. So basically, in a sense, the regime, learning from this, decided to clean up all the It's from activists from Azerbaijan, from all the civil society. Even there was two separate persons who protested in blue and green zone. They were also physically assaulted and was kicked out from both places, and they were both Azerbaijanis who has been protesting for animal rights, but also the labor rights of the people who has been working for the COP29 venue, and they have not been paid enough. As for the oil and gas, what my dad's research shows is that the 1.3% of the whole energy balance of Azerbaijan comes from renewable energy. So 70% and 28% respectively comes from oil and gas energy. So Azerbaijan is not even actually investing on renewable energy. At the same time, the more than 50% of Azerbaijani budget revenues actually comes from oil and gas. So it's very important because after the invasion of Ukraine, right now Europe is trying to rely on Azerbaijan and buying oil and gas from Azerbaijan. But also my dad's research shows that the oil and gas that Azerbaijan pumps to Europe is not really coming from Azerbaijan, because the Azerbaijani oil and gas basic extraction is getting more and more difficult, and we don't really have enough to supply it to Europe. What Azerbaijan right now is doing, also buying it from Russia. So considering that our economy is completely relying on oil and gas sales, and the COP29 is a great place to have a lot of oil and gas lobbyists, it's actually a great chance for Azerbaijani government to have more oil and gas contracts, whether this comes from Russia or not, and then to enrich the regime itself.
Anjala Bayramova, you are a human rights lawyer. You have a good deal of experience understanding what's going on here. If you could explain who the Azerbaijani president is, Ilham Aliyev. He's been in power for 20 years following his father. His regime routinely targeting climate activists, human rights activists, and journalists, jailing them.
I can actually explain it from my own experience in Azerbaijan when I was living there. I was tortured twice in Baku and also in Lankaran, in a different city as well. So I'm a human rights lawyer, but I was also working as an activist. I have been observing the elections, writing the cases to European Court of Human Rights. And what happened is that as a result of all these tortures, I cannot sleep without a neck pillow, as they injured my neck discs. They also crushed my ribs and my kneecap, so which means that I am unable to wear like a normal bra and all those things, because I still have injuries that I have in my body, and I'm also diagnosed with PTSD. So this is like one example from me, but that's not it. Azerbaijani government is not only staying there and only like targeting us physically, detaining us in detention center. No, they're also trying to target us psychologically. So for example, they spread our personal photos. My personal photos have been spreaded on the internet, and those photos was from like my first Halloween in Sweden. So they're spreading this kind of photos as trying to like kind of picture us in a bad light, saying that, oh, we're pro-Western, we're pro-European. So we are like, I don't know, celebrating Halloween and all these things. I also have pictures, and also my dad's with LGBT flags, which they also spread it on internet. Azerbaijani government also sex tape the activists. They put hidden cameras to their rooms, to their bathrooms. They even sometimes send spies to have a relationship with especially women activists and sex tape it and put it on internet. So which sounds like a movie, but it's in a real life situation in Azerbaijan. At the same time, while talking about the regime, I think it's quite clear when looking at the Azerbaijani regime, it's quite clear to see that before Ilham Aliyev, it was his father who was also president of Azerbaijan during Soviet Union and a KGB general. And Ilham Aliyev, as it seems, getting his son to get ready to succeed himself. And his wife is a vice president of Azerbaijan. So it's more like a monarchy, it's a family affair in a sense, and they own everything. Like they own all the insurance companies, they own all the banks, properties, and everything is, it's not a state owned, it's a family oligarch owned in Azerbaijan.
Anjala Bayramova, we want to thank you for being with us. Azerbaijani human rights lawyer, LGBTQ activist, and daughter of the political prisoner Gubad Ibadolu, a prominent anti-corruption economist and well-known professor, imprisoned and now under house arrest. Jala has been advocating for his release, as well as the release of other political prisoners in Azerbaijan. Coming up next, we look at the growing debate over nuclear power as Google, Amazon, Microsoft invest in nuclear plants to power their artificial intelligence projects. Stay with us.